Anya and Yi strolled through the deserted hall of Asian peoples.
So what makes the Juuchi Yosamu so special? Just the fact that it is a Muramasa blade?
Not just any blade, but the blade. The last weapon he ever produced. You see, legend has it that it was just before winter where Muramasa found out about the Shogun's edict. He knew that the Imperial troops would be coming soon to destroy his forge and seize any weapons he had produced. But the swordsmith lived in a small valley between three major mountain ranges. The Shogun's men did not make it up the mountains in time before the winter snows came, and so they were forced to wait another 3 months until the pass cleared enough for them to reach the swordsmith's home. Muramasa used those months wisely, creating his ultimate masterpiece, blending every bit of his anger, jealousy, hatred, and desire for vengeance into the blade, until the blade itself took on a darker hue than normal. Some say it even gleamed with hunger whenever it drew close to its enemies. Unlike other swordsmiths, Muramasa never etched designs into the blades of his katana. He felt that it was doing the weapon a disservice to deface it in such a manner, but he made an exception with his final masterpiece. That one, legend has it, had the image of a rampant dragon added to the blade just above the hilt, its claws stretching downward along the length of the sword as if reaching for the sword's target. A visual representation of all the darkness he had poured into its construction. I would suspect it probably looked very much like the dragon in the drawing you just showed me.
They were deep in the Hall of Asian Peoples, and Yi steered them over to a large display focused on the samurai eras of ancient Japan. They stopped in front of a particular case that held several different types of sword.
Ah, here we are.
Yi took a katana from its stand inside the case and withdrew the blade so that Anya could see it. He pointed at a line that ran down the middle of the blade from the narrow tip toward the hilt.
Look here. This is known as the hamon. It is the point where the sharper steel, which forms the blade's edge, meets the softer steel at its core, which gives the blade its exceptional flexibility. During the sword-making process, the smith would paint over this line with a very thin mixture of clay and ash, and then heat it all over again to help bond the two sections together. What was unique about a sword fashioned by Muramasa was the identical hamon that could be found on either side of the blade. It was one of his trademarks.
Yi flipped the sword over to show Anya that the line tracing down the opposite side of the blade was identical to the former.
May I?
Certainly. But be careful because the blade is very sharp.
Anya took the sword, leaving the scabbard in Yi's hands, and stepped into the center of the room where there was more open space than by the displays. She wanted to get a feel for this blade, get a sense of what she was facing in the presence of its more famous cousin. She slid into the first of several moves of an advanced sword kata, testing the weapon. It was lighter than her own sword and more maneuverable, but did not have the kind of reach that she liked. She realized quickly, in fact, that she preferred the heavier blade of her broadsword. Still, there was no doubting the craftsmanship inherent in the katana. It was perfectly balanced and cut the air with precision. She stopped what she was doing and turned, only to find Dr. Yi staring at her with an open mouth.
That was so incredibly sexy.
Look out, Uma Thurman, here I come.
Anya brought the sword closer to her face so that she could get a look at the mei near the hilt. Yi had been right. It was identical to the one on the sword used by the dragon, if you added in the missing cross piece on the H-like character. She walked over to her companion, accepted the scabbard from his hands, and moved to slide the sword back inside.
Ah.
As she did, she felt a sharp pain in her finger and looked down to find that she had nicked herself on the edge of the blade. A drop of blood welled up as she stuck her finger in her mouth.
The curse of Muramasa strikes again.
So how do I tell if my client's sword is really the Juuchi Yosamu?
The first thing I would do is check the hamon. If they are identical, front and back, you will have your first bit of proof. Then see if the owner will let you examine the mei under magnification, or after it has been polished and cleaned. That might help bring out the missing crossbar to confirm it. I have to say this, however. If it is the Yosamu, your client is going to be hard-pressed to sell it for what it's worth. That weapon would be considered by many to be a cultural treasure of the Japanese, and I, for one, would want to see it returned to its rightful government. It should not be in the hands of a private individual.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Yi.
That night, Anya dreamed of the dragon. She was being hunted through the woods by the scaled beast from which the assassin had derived his nickname, and it would only be a matter of moments before the creature found her. Anya ran frantically through the thick underbrush, while behind her the beast closed in. She could smell its sulfurous stench and knew that it was gaining ground faster, that she wouldn't be able to outrun it. She ran on until the trail she was following opened up into a canyon in the midst of the woods, a canyon with only one way out. She was trapped. Slowly, Anya turned to face the beast.
It was just a dream.
She was about to roll over and take a sip of water from the glass on her bedstand when she realized that she wasn't alone. There was someone in the room with her. She lay still on the bed and looked around through eyes that were barely open. There was a shadowy form off to her right, slowly crossing the room and moving closer to her bed. The intruder didn't make a sound, crossing the floor like a ghost in the night. He stood at the very foot of the bed, looking down at her. Anya could feel the other's gaze, could see eyes gleaming in the morning half-light. Whoever it was, he was dressed to disguise his appearance, in dark clothing and a hooded mask, just as the dragon and his men had worn back in Paris. As Anya lay there, doing all she could to make it seem as if she were still asleep, the intruder slowly brought a hand out from behind his back, revealing a long, gleaming blade. Slowly, the weapon was raised over the intruder's head, ready for the strike. Anya threw herself to the side. The intruder's blade slashed through the mattress, but Anya was on her knees beside the bed. The intruder danced backward out of reach of her weapon. Anya got to her feet and braced herself. Anya lunged, but the intruder jumped on top of the bed. A vicious overhead stroke nearly took Anya's arm off at the shoulder, but she threw her body backward out of the way. As the intruder pressed her mercilessly, Anya instinctively backed out of the bedroom. She managed to put the length of the sofa between them. They circled the room, keeping the furniture between them for the moment, each of them preparing for another onslaught. As they did so, the light from the rising sun shot through the window and illuminated the sword held in the intruder's hand. Anya's gaze was immediately drawn to the etching on the blade just above the hilt, the etching of a dragon, rampant. She was facing the dragon for a second time.
Huh? What the hell?
Dave bolted upright in his chair, frantically rubbing the sleep from his eyes. He had the watch, but apparently he'd dozed off a little, because one moment he was watching the darkened windows of Anya Creed's apartment, and the next thing he knew, there was a sword battle going on inside.
Hey, guys! We got a situation in here!
Marco rushed inside, Jesse right on his heels.
What do we got?
See for yourself!
Code red! Code red! Keep watch. Don't turn this into a fiasco.
Yeah. Get going!
The battle royal between Anya and the dragon continued. Anya fainted to the left. Her sword cut a furrow down the dragon's thigh. The dragon faltered, and Anya used that moment to put a little more space between them. But the dragon abruptly turned and rushed across the loft. Anya flipped her blade around, holding it like a spear. The intruder managed to get the door partially open just as the sword slammed point first into it, pinning his sleeve to the door. As Anya started toward him, the dragon raised his sword and cut his sleeve free. When she skidded to a stop to keep from colliding with the door, the dragon slipped through into the hallway. Anya willed the sword back into the otherwhere, freeing it from the door. She followed the intruder into the hallway. Anya turned left outside her apartment, heading for the downstairs steps, but realized that he had gone the other way, toward the staircase leading to the roof instead. Anya turned around, heading back in the other direction. She took the steps two at a time, and as she reached the landing above, she summoned her sword again. The door to the rooftop was directly in front of her. She grabbed the handle and yanked the door open. She threw herself forward in a somersault onto the rooftop. The dragon was standing on the small structure that covered the stairwell door to the roof and would have cut Anya's head from her shoulders had she gone through the door upright. Rolling to her feet, Anya realized that she was standing on the rooftop in her pajamas with nothing on her feet while waving a large sword around in the air.
They're on the roof!
Dave couldn't run, not with a lame leg from a previous operation, so he always got left behind. But this time he didn't mind, because out of all of them, he was the one with the front row seat. The dragon jumped off the structure and raced across the rooftop, intent on making the leap to the next building. Anya gave chase. She released her sword, needing the extra speed she could gain by sending it away. As the dragon sped toward the edge of the roof, Anya realized his intent. The next building was close enough to reach with a decent leap. Anya reached deep and found a bit more speed. When the dragon jumped, Anya slammed into him in mid-leap. The impact knocked her clear, but she was up again in a heartbeat. The dragon stood and Anya waded in. He lashed out with a sidekick, but Anya skipped away. They circled each other, hands weaving back and forth, both a distraction and a means to stay loose, ready to respond no matter what the strike. This time it was the dragon who attacked first. Anya blocked the punches and then dropped to the ground, swinging her legs around in a scything motion, trying to cut the dragon's feet out from under him. Anticipating the move, the dragon leaped over backward in a somersault that put him a few feet away from her. Again, they closed, trading blow after blow. Anya blocked most of what came at her, so a few strikes did manage to get through. She took one to the ribs. A glancing blow off the side of her head momentarily stunned her. She shook it off, but the damage was done. That blow had given the dragon a few precious seconds to break away and start the run for the next rooftop. Doggedly, Anya went in pursuit. Marco and the rest of the surveillance team spilled out onto the street, headed for Anya's building. They kept looking upward, waiting for one of the combatants to make a wrong move and end up splattered on the sidewalk after a four-story fall. Back in the observation room, Dave continued to give them play-by-play over the radio. The dragon reached the edge of the roof, jumped, touched down on the other side, and kept going. Anya followed suit, although the blow to the head had slowed her down a bit. When she reached the edge of the roof, she launched herself into space. She wasn't going to make it. One hand caught the edge of the roof. Her body slammed into the side of the building, the force of the impact almost jarring her loose. Anya held on with all her strength. By some miracle, she managed to remain hanging on to the edge of the building, though by only the thinnest of margins.
Look!
Above their heads, between the buildings, the group could see someone hanging off the edge of the roof. Marco radioed Dave.
Can you tell who it is?
No. They're out of my sight now, behind the next building over.
Terrified that Creed was going to die on his watch, and he'd have to explain how it had all gone wrong to Henshaw, Marco rushed for the entrance to the building, praying he'd be in time. Slowly, ever so slowly, Anya reached up with her other hand, being careful not to twist and pull herself off the roof. Gradually, inch by inch, she managed to get her other hand over the edge of the rooftop. She rested there a minute, then began to pull herself upward. The outer edge of the roof began crumbling beneath her weight. She was twisting in the wind again, barely hanging on with one hand. To make matters worse, her left hand was starting to slip as well. She could feel her fingers slowly sliding backward, 1 millimeter at a time.
Hold on.
By the time he burst onto the rooftop, he couldn't see her from where he stood, and he didn't have time to search every side. He keyed the radio.
Which way?
Left, in the middle.
Marco rushed over to the edge. Anya tried to swing her right arm up and over the edge, but the motion only served to make her other hand slip faster. She wrapped her thumb over the tops of her fingers, bearing down, but it was too late. She'd slid too far and couldn't find any traction to keep her from slipping farther.
I am not going to die like this!
Marco rushed over to the edge. As he drew closer, he saw her hand and watched in dismay as her fingers slid backward. He dove forward, arms outstretched. The fingers of his left hand touched something soft, something alive. He desperately seized it with all the strength he could muster. He felt her fingers wrap around his wrist in return. Then her weight asserted itself, and he felt himself being dragged forward. His head popped over the edge of the roof, and he found himself staring into those amber eyes he'd first noted in that photograph back in Paris. He tried to brace himself against the pressure that was pulling him forward.
Hold on, lady!
He got his knees braced against the wall and planted his feet, stopping their forward slide. Now all he had to do was pull her up. Anya had no idea who the guy was or where he had come from, but she used her right hand to reach up and grab onto his wrist from the opposite side. Her good Samaritan was stronger than he looked. With a few heaves backward, he managed to pull her up and over the ledge and back onto the rooftop. Then he collapsed onto the ground. He tried to catch his breath. Anya didn't blame him. Her heart was racing a bit wildly at that moment as well.
You all right?
Yeah. Thanks to you.
He shrugged it off. But something wasn't feeling quite right to Anya.
How'd you know I was in trouble?
I was on the stairs, heading for my apartment when I saw you through the window. I knew there was no way you were going to make that jump, so I ran up the stairs.
And here you are.
Yeah, here I am.
Well, thanks for saving my life, but I'm afraid I don't have time to chat.
No, wait!
Anya quickly left the roof behind. It was only when she was halfway down the stairs that it occurred to her to wonder what he was doing up and about at that hour of the day. She decided to be thankful that he was, and leave it at that. Marco waited a good half hour before making his own way back down to street level. Anya Creed was nowhere in sight, so he kept his head down and headed for the pre-planned rendezvous point. Marco wanted to have a long talk with Dave. If he found out he'd been sleeping on watch again. Exhausted from the fight and from the release of all that adrenaline, Anya returned to her loft just long enough to pack a change of clothes, grab a first aid kit, and throw on a pair of shoes. The dragon had been in her apartment once, possibly more than that, so it wasn't safe for her to stay there anymore. She knew a decent hotel a few blocks away, and she decided to hole up there for the time being until she could figure out just what to do. She checked in, took a shower, and then, using the supplies in the medical kit, tended to her feet that were torn and bloody from the rooftop gravel. When she was finished, she collapsed onto the bed and fell into a dreamless sleep. Later that morning, her sleep was interrupted.
Hello?
Anya! Thank God I found you. You've got to come down to the studio and fix this.
Fix what, Doug?
The episode! We've got to trim another 6 minutes and 30 seconds from the footage. Hey, maybe we could...
Anya let him drone on for a moment, then cut in when she could.
I'll be down within the hour, Doug. Don't do anything until I get there.
She hung up before he could protest further. Spending a few hours in the editing room with Doug wasn't her idea of a fun time, but she needed to take her mind off the dragon and her close call from earlier that morning. Fighting with her producer might be just the thing. Most of Anya's day was taken up with correcting the issues that had come up after Doug had begun to do the final edits on the episode. She spent the afternoon working with him. And by the time she was done, night had fallen, and the streets were full of commuters trying to get home from work. People pushed past on both sides, but she barely noticed, her focus completely inward. The past few days had been a blur of action and reaction. She was being stalked by an international assassin for reasons unknown, though she was pretty sure it had to do with the sword she carried. She'd been attacked twice in the past 48 hours, more than likely by men in the assassin's employ. The assassin himself had broken into her hotel room, sent someone to interrupt her lunch, and was, more likely than not, out there, somewhere, right now, watching. She'd seen a hypnotist, allowed herself to be put in a trance, and been able to draw a perfect replication of the emblem on the assassin's own sword. A sword that was most likely cursed, and just as mystical as her own. She'd even watched a man die only inches away from her, and she couldn't imagine that death by subway was an easy way to go. Last but not least, the assassin himself broke into her loft and tried to kill her while she slept. Frankly, it was a lot to take in. Anya walked down the street, lost in thought. She had lots of questions, but few answers. What did the dragon want? How had he found out about her? What did he know about the sword she carried? How did her sword compare to his? What made it all the more frustrating was that she felt as though the answers were all right there in front of her, and she just wasn't seeing them clearly enough to put everything together into a coherent whole. Like having all the pieces of a puzzle, but without a picture to work from, she didn't know if the blue pieces represented the ocean, the sky, or some other colored object. As a scientist, she was used to looking at things through a logical progression that more often than not was based on a cause and effect relationship between two items. In order to sort through the mess she found herself in, she decided to apply the same elemental logic and see where that got her. So what did she know? She knew there had once been an international hitman known as the Dragon, who apparently had survived the explosion everyone else thought had killed him, and he was following her around New York City. Garin had claimed that the Dragon carried a sword that was the mystical opposite of her own, the dark to her light. The information she'd managed to haul out of her subconscious while under hypnosis had provided her with the image she'd seen etched onto the dragon's sword, and her visit to Dr. Yi had revealed that the sword itself might be the fabled Juuchi Osamu, 10,000 Cold Nights, the final katana produced by the master swordsmith Sengo Muramasa. The sword was said to have been instilled with all the bloodthirsty madness that had characterized Muramasa's final days. All of which confirmed what Garin had been suggesting. The dragon had passed up the opportunity to kill her on two different occasions. First, during the assault at Rue's estate, and later while she lay sleeping in her hotel room in Paris. Since then, his agents had not only followed her about New York, but had tried to kidnap her as well. Clearly, he wanted something from her. And there was only one thing she knew that was possibly valuable enough for him to go through all the trouble. One thing that he wouldn't be able to get his hands on simply by killing her outright. Her sword. It came when she called. It existed to do her bidding, and her bidding alone. While she wasn't positive, she suspected that killing her would leave the sword lost in the otherwhere until it chose another bearer. And who knew when that might be? It was the only thing that made sense. The dragon wanted Joan's sword. Anya had no intention of giving it to him. She found herself at the 81st Street entrance to Central Park and decided that a walk through the park might be a nice way to end the evening. The thought of going back to her apartment, the one the dragon himself had been in on more than one occasion, just wasn't all that appealing at the moment. If she had to, she could always catch a cab back to Brooklyn when she got to the other side on Fifth Avenue. There were quite a few people still in the park, despite the fact that evening had come and the sun had already set. And Anya enjoyed the sensation of getting lost among them, anonymous, even if only for a few stolen minutes. She had been wandering the grounds for about 15 minutes when she saw him. He was hanging back, not making it too obvious, but there was no doubt that he was keeping her in sight, lingering in her wake. He was wearing a dark windbreaker and slacks, with a hat pulled low over his face so that she wasn't able, especially from this distance, to get a good look at his features. It was at least the second time in as many days that she had been followed, and she was starting to resent the attention. They hadn't been shy about chasing her through the subway system, and she had the same feeling now. The tourists around her would not be a deterrent to her capture, if that was indeed what he wanted. For a moment, she was tempted to confront him directly, to start striding determinedly toward him, just to see what he would do. Only the idea that he might just pull a gun and simply shoot her prevented her from such a brash course of action. Instead of a direct confrontation, she opted for a more covert approach. Rue was bored. He'd only been in the hotel for a little over 24 hours, but laying low and staying out of sight was not something he was interested in doing. For a man who had lived as long as he had surprisingly little patience. He knew Henshaw had things under control with regard to the dragon's sudden interest in Anya. That wasn't the problem. The problem lay in the fact that if he had to sit there and stare at those same four walls for another minute, he was going to go nuts. Why did Henshaw have him hiding out anyway? Anya was the one in danger, not him.
Enough of this.
He got up to dress for dinner. Rue had old-fashioned tastes, and one of the things that he appreciated about the Waldorf was that you were expected to be properly dressed for dinner. None of this casual dress nonsense that seemed to have become the norm, and thank the heavens for that, he thought. Attired in a crisp blue suit and matching tie, Rue headed for the main dining room. Two hours later, he was relaxing after his meal over a glass of brandy when he spotted the most exquisite young woman sitting alone several tables away. She was Asian, looked to be in her 20s, and was dressed in a figure-hugging black dress that highlighted her every curve. She had that classic porcelain doll look, pale skin, full red lips, her long hair as dark as oil at midnight. Her beauty wasn't what had attracted his attention, however, but rather the fact that she had been casting surreptitious glances in his direction throughout his meal. It appeared he'd found something that would make a worthwhile diversion for the evening. Rue's success with young women was matched only by his skill at the poker table. The trick, he knew, was to make them think it was all their idea. He caught and held her glance for a long moment, then signaled for his bill. When the waiter brought it, he signed it to his room, and taking his drink with him, he moved across the restaurant to the bar on the other side of the room. He intentionally chose a seat several chairs away from anyone else and waited, knowing the conclusion was already a foregone one.
Is anyone sitting here?
Rue turned to find the young beauty from the restaurant indicating the chair beside him, a smile on her face and a spark in her eyes.
Please be my guest.
She slid deftly onto the seat, managing to look extraordinarily graceful and at the same time giving him a flash of tanned and supple thigh through the slit in the side of her dress as she did so. Rue couldn't help but smile. It was going to be an interesting evening after all. The bartender wandered over and Rue's new companion glanced at his glass.
I'll have one of what he's having.
Rue raised an eyebrow but didn't say anything. She turned to face him and smiled.
Aren't you even going to ask me my name?
No. If you want me to know it, I'm sure that you'll tell me eventually.
And if I don't?
And then our lovemaking will be all the more passionate for the mystery.
That's rather forward of you. What gives you the idea that I intend to sleep with you?
Because a woman like you can't resist a challenge. But if it will set you at ease, my name is Wu.
Hello, Ru.
I take it that puts the ball firmly in my court?
The bartender returned with her drink. She took a healthy swallow of the 130-year-old brandy as if she had it every day.
Do you think you are up to it?
Well, we shall never know unless we give it a try now, will we?
What did you have in mind?
How about we retire to my suite and see what we can do with a full bottle of this fine brandy?
An excellent suggestion. Maybe, if you're good, I'll tell you my name when we're finished.
Whatever the lady desires.
Rue signaled for the check and signed for the two drinks.
I'd like a bottle of this brandy delivered up to my room.
Very good, sir.
Rue then extended an arm to the gorgeous young creature by his side. They didn't say much in the elevator, though more than a few sidelong glances passed between them. They made some small talk about nothing of consequence on the way to his suite and arrived to find room service already waiting outside with their order.
Your brandy, sir?
Yes, thank you. One second, please. If you'll pardon me for a moment, I'll be right with you.
Certainly.
Here, just leave the cart. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Rue left the cart in the entrance hallway where it wouldn't be in their way, and, drinks in hand, returned to the living room, only to find it empty. The bedroom door was open, and a pair of high heels lay discarded in the entrance. Just beyond, her cast-off dress lay in a pool of silk.
Bring me that drink, Rue. I'm thirsty.
Never one to deny a beautiful woman, he did as he was told, an I-told-you-so grin on his face. The lights were off in the bedroom, but there was enough illumination coming through the thin curtains covering the windows to reveal his guest, now naked, languishing across his sheets. The light cast dappled shadows across her sensuous form, and as she rolled to face him, the tattoo of the dragon that covered much of her taut young flesh seemed to ripple and writhe as if the creature was rising to life from the surface of her skin.
Come to bed, Rue.
As uncharacteristic as it was of him, Rue again did as he was told. Anya kept walking, but began to steer herself toward one of the side paths, away from the crowds. She knew the layout of the park pretty well, and was counting on the fact that her mysterious follower more than likely did not. It would give her the chance to spring the trap that she was getting ready to set. The direction she chose led the two of them along a paved footpath through a thick copse of trees. A few hundred yards into the trees was an old discarded construction pipe, the kind that was large enough to drive a truck through. At night, it would be a haven for drunks and junkies, a place to avoid the police patrols that routinely went through the park. But at this hour, it would more than likely be empty. It was there that Anya intended to spring her ambush. The trail took a quick little dogleg before it reached that particular point in the walkway, and as soon as she knew she was out of sight, Anya broke into a jog. Reaching the construction pipe, she slipped inside, her back to the wall. Anya waited until her pursuer stepped past the mouth of the pipe, and then she struck. She grabbed him by the shirt front and hauled him back into the pipe. She used her momentum to slam him against the nearby wall hard enough to make his teeth rattle. Half a second later, she had the tip of her sword against his throat.
You get 10 seconds to start talking.
No need for violence, Miss Crane.
Lowering her sword, Anya stepped back.
Henshaw, what are you doing here?
Following you.
And not very well, apparently. Following me? Why would you do that? Rue, was it your people in the subway the other night? Fine. Give me your phone and I'll speak to Rue myself.
He handed it over without objection and perhaps the slightest trace of relief. She hit the redial button, figuring that Henshaw would have been in constant contact with Rue as he followed her through the city streets. She waited for her mentor to answer.
No answer. Are you sure he's waiting for your call?
Henshaw immediately pressed redial and waited through a set of rings.
Come on!
They headed for the exit to the park. Once on Fifth Avenue, Anya flagged down a passing cab, waited for it to come to a stop, and then climbed inside with Henshaw at her heels.
Waldorf Astoria, please hurry.
Anya's anxiety ratcheted up a notch. She'd never seen Henshaw in a hurry, not even when under fire. Apparently his inner alarms were going off too. The cabbie got them through the city streets in record time. Henshaw shoved a handful of bills through the slot, and then the two of them were out the door. They rushed into the hotel before the doorman could even get out his usual greeting. The elevator seemed to take forever, and Anya was grateful that no one else tried to get on board with them. Henshaw was practically vibrating with tension. When they hit the 8th floor, Henshaw drew a gun from his jacket and led the way down the hall toward the suite at the other end, where Rue was staying for the duration of his visit to New York. They were still a half a dozen rooms away when they saw that the door to the suite was partially open. Anya got a firm grip on the hilt of her sword with two hands, ready to deal with whatever might be waiting for them inside. Henshaw glanced back, saw that she was ready for a confrontation if it came to that, and crept down the corridor to the room itself. Reaching out with his free hand, he silently pushed the door the rest of the way open. Even from outside, they could tell that a struggle had taken place inside the room. Cushions had been pulled off the couch, and a chair had been knocked to the ground. Cautiously, they stepped forward. The living room looked as though it had been the scene of a fight. In addition to the furniture that had been knocked over, the glass top of the coffee table had a starred crack in the center, as if someone had driven the heel of their foot into it. And the television had been knocked out of the entertainment cabinet to lay shattered in a heap on the floor. Seeing the damage, they quickly checked the rest of the suite, doing it as a team, so that they could provide cover for each other if they found someone or something unexpected. In the end, they didn't find anything more. The suite was empty. Rue was gone.
Maybe he wasn't here. Maybe he's down in the bar or in the dining room right now.
Could I have the manager, please? Yes, please. I'm calling from room 822. I was expecting my employer, Mr. Rue, to be waiting here, but he seems to have stepped out. Did he leave any word at the front desk as to where he was going or when he expected to return?
Anya's anxious state of mind made the wait, as the manager looked into Henshaw's request, seem like hours.
I see. No, that will be all. Thank you. Rue left the restaurant in the company of a young Asian woman around 9. The manager says he'd never seen her before, so that reduces the possibility she was one of the professionals that they're used to seeing who used the hotel as a meeting place. They tend to be known quantities in a place like this. Then he checked with room service and they confirmed that they delivered a bottle of brandy to an older gentleman and a younger woman here in this room about an hour ago.
Anya's mind went immediately to her encounter at the cafe with the mysterious Shizu. Was that who Rue had been seen with? If so, how had she found him? Had the dragon had them all under surveillance without their knowing it? Could they be under observation even now? The two of them immediately checked their individual cells, but neither one was receiving a call, which left the hotel phone somewhere beneath all the debris.
Hello? Miss Creed, what a surprise to find you there.
You're not surprised and you know it. Where's Rue?
At the mention of his employer's name, Henshaw walked into the bedroom next door, and Anya soon heard him searching around in the debris looking for another extension to listen in on.
The old goat is fine. For now. Whether or not he remains that way depends on you, however.
What do you want?
I thought that would have been obvious by now. I want the sword. My, my, my. Has the proverbial cat got your tongue?
I don't know what you're talking about. What sword?
I can do this all night if you'd like. But I don't think your friend Rue is up to it. Are you sure you want to play it this way?
I told you I don't know what you're talking about. All right, lay off. I know what sword you mean.
Of course you do. Seems you're not so tough after all, Miss Creed. Bring the sword with you to the Brooklyn Botanic Garden tomorrow at sunset. Come alone. Walk to the viewing pavilion inside the Japanese Hill and Pond Garden. I will meet you there with the old man, and we'll do an exchange. Your sword for your friend's life. Understood?
Yes, I understand. I'll be there.
Good. And one other thing. Be sure to leave that British bastard Henshaw behind. You don't need him trying to be a hero and messing up what should be a simple exchange.
I can have that garden flooded with men inside of 24 hours. We'll grab her and then—
Wait! Not now! I have to check something first. Something important.
A sudden suspicion had swept over Anya, one that would change everything if it was correct. She dug through her backpack for the drawing pad that she'd been carrying around since her session with Dr. Laurent. When she found it, she pulled it out and flipped to the first image, the one of the swordsman's face. She stared at it intently, trying to see beyond the mask and hood. She studied the bridge of the nose, the shape of the eyes, the overall sense of what the picture was telling her, trying to answer a single question. Could the dragon be a woman instead of a man?
What is it?
I'm not sure yet.
Anya's thoughts went back to that day in the cafe, to the young woman she'd met, Shizu. Could she have been far more than she appeared to be? Anya had been convinced she was an agent of the dragon, sent to harass her, throw her off balance, just like those who had been following her and the men who'd been sent to try to kidnap her on the streets later that night. But what if she was something more than just a foot soldier? What if she was the dragon? It would certainly explain a few things. Anya summoned up a memory of Shizu's face and tried to mentally impose it over the image of the swordsman she'd drawn on the pad. As best as she could tell, the two were a match. Anya explained her theory to Henshaw, showing him the drawing and explaining how she'd arrived at her conclusion.
That can't be right, Anya. The dragon has been operating since the late 70s. Every single scrap of information about him points to the fact that he is a man. Hell, even if that was all a front, even if she cleverly used misinformation to throw everyone off track for decades, you've still got a problem with the time frame. The girl you saw couldn't have been more than 30, yet the dragon has been claiming credit for political assassinations for more than 3 decades.
She's his successor.
I'm sorry, she's what?
His successor. Most everyone, and by that I mean the various law enforcement agencies, believes that the dragon, the real dragon, died in that explosion in Madrid, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's assume that is true. The dragon did die. And I'll bet that your intelligence information would support that theory too, wouldn't it? For years, there was no further activity associated with the dragon after the failure in Madrid.
Word that the dragon had resurfaced didn't start up again until about 3 years ago.
You see, that's the key. Someone else has taken up the mantle of the dragon and suborned his identity and has been using it as their own for the past several years.
But why? What would be the point?
Fame? Fortune? A sense of adventure? Who knows?
And the rumors about the sword?
Anya didn't have an answer for that, and it was the one part of her theory that was bothering her. Had it been the sword that had influenced Shizu to pick up the tattered image of the dragon and wrap it around herself? Had the sword somehow guided her actions, given her the skills she needed to step into the role, to fool the law enforcement community for so long? If so, then it was all the more important for Anya to stop her and destroy the sword. Perhaps even more important than rescuing Rue.
I'm not sure, but I think I know the reason.
She explained about the conversation she'd had with Garin and his theory that the dragon and her weapon were a polar opposite to Anya and the sword she carried. For the second time that day, Anya was treated to a view behind the mask that Henshaw usually wore. She could see the wonder of it all on his face.
2 swords. Created for cross purposes, one representing the light and one representing the dark. So, what do we do now?
We get Rue back, whole and in one piece. And then we deal with the dragon once and for all.
It didn't take them long to come up with a plan. Using Anya's laptop, they discovered that the park opened up at 8 every morning and closed again at 6. Sunset would happen just a few minutes before closing, so they should have the park to themselves at that point, and they intended to use that to their advantage. Henshaw would go in shortly after the park opened the next morning. He'd find a suitable position where he wouldn't be stumbled upon by park visitors, but one that at the same time would allow him to keep the pavilion itself under observation. They had little doubt that Shizu would have the park under surveillance, but they hoped she wouldn't have it in place that early. Just to be safe, Henshaw agreed to wear a disguise when he made the entrance attempt. By arriving so far in advance of their scheduled meeting time, Anya hoped to be able to spot Shizu's people getting into position. Once Henshaw knew where they were, he could relay that information via directional radio to Anya. It would be a lot easier for her to take them out once she knew where they were. Henshaw would be armed with a high-powered rifle, and he would keep Anya in view at all times. When the dragon appeared, hopefully with Rue in tow, it would be Henshaw's job to deal with anyone who posed a threat to Rue's continued well-being. Anya, on the other hand, would focus her energy and attention on the dragon. If things got too dangerous, she'd call in a little extra help from Henshaw. In order to pull it off, they were going to need a communication system that would be difficult to intercept. Henshaw knew where to get one. Just in case the phone in Rue's suite had been bugged, Henshaw went down to the lobby and used a payphone to make arrangements. While he was gone, Anya tried to clean things up a little. She put the cushions back on the couch, put the chairs in their places, and swept up the loose glass from the smashed coffee table and television set. When Henshaw returned half an hour later, he had a well-built, dark-haired man who looked a bit like Antonio Banderas with him. Seeing him, another piece of the puzzle fell into place in Anya's mind.
Well, if it isn't my rooftop savior.
Sorry I couldn't say anything to you then. Operational parameters and all that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anya, meet Marco. Marco, Anya. Now, let's get on with this.
Henshaw asked me to come here and show you how to wire yourself up with the microphone and receiver for tomorrow night. You ever use anything like this before?
I know how to use a walkie-talkie. Does that count?
Well, technology has come a long way since then, but at least the principle's the same.
Marco walked over to the desk and took several small black cases the size of jewelry boxes from the pockets of his light coat. He opened one of them and removed two flesh-colored pieces of plastic from inside. To Anya, they looked like earbud headphones, minus the wires. Marco handed one to Anya and one to Henshaw.
This is your receiver. Sits inside your ear just like a hearing aid does. Except it's so small it's practically invisible to anyone standing nearby. They would need to actively look inside your ear to spot it. Yeah, go on, try it. We need to make sure we get the fit right.
Henshaw had obviously used one before. He popped it, tugged on his earlobe for a moment, and announced that it was fine. Anya, on the other hand, had to twist and turn hers for a moment before she got a good fit. Marco picked up one of the other boxes, opened it, and showed them both the wafer-thin piece of flesh-colored plastic it contained.
This is a microphone disc. Peel away the protective covering to expose the adhesive, and then just press it firmly against your skin. Somewhere near your neck or upper chest is usually the best place. It is extremely sensitive, but I wouldn't count on it picking up your words if you stick it in your calf, for instance.
Marco picked up the mini walkie-talkie from the pile of gear on the table in front of him.
Go ahead, put on a mic, then we'll give it a test.
He waited to be certain they both followed the instructions he'd given, and then walked into the bedroom, closing the door behind him. A moment later, Anya could hear Marco's voice in her ear.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me, Anya?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Hang on a minute while I check Henshaw's gear.
Marco repeated the sequence with her partner and then returned to the living room. He collected their equipment, put each set of earpieces and corresponding mics into a single case, and handed a case to each of them.
They have a battery life of 24 hours, so don't put them on until you're ready to go, wherever it is you're going.
What about interception or interference?
The radios use a pretty rare frequency, and the signals are encrypted automatically. So you won't pick up anyone else's traffic, nor will they pick up yours. Now, the transmitter might be small, but it's powerful. You should be able to remain in contact with each other up to 2 miles away. It'll even penetrate solid rock up to 500 feet thick, so the walls of a building or even an entire house shouldn't be any kind of problem for you. And that's the best I can do on short notice.
Anya nearly laughed. If that was what he could do on short notice, she wasn't sure she wanted to know what he'd be capable of when given more time. Probably reroute the NSA's super-secret satellites just to get his voicemail, she thought. With the communications issues resolved, Henshaw saw Marco out the door. He was gone for a few minutes, and when he came back, Anya was waiting for him with an annoyed look on her face.
Let me guess. He's an old friend who just happened to be hanging around down the street when you called. Out with it, Henshaw.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I said spill it!
No sense in keeping things a secret now, is there? We've had you under surveillance ever since the day you left the estate.
Why?
Rue was worried. He knew about the dragon, knew what he was capable of, how far he would go to get something he wanted. At the same time, he'd heard rumors about an artifact the dragon was supposed to possess.
You mean Muramasa's sword?
Yes, right, the sword.
And then what? Did he think he was just going to dangle me out there as bait? Wait and see what happened?
I wasn't privy to all his plans, Miss Creed.
I have half a mind to just leave him there, Henshaw. He was playing games with my life. Okay, we both know that I can't leave him in her hands any more than you can, no matter how angry I am. So let's figure out the rest of this plan and call it a night.
Anya and Henshaw talked for another hour, getting everything straight so that when the time came, they both knew what they were supposed to be doing and when. It was a reasonable plan, straightforward, without too many things that could trip them up. Of course, she thought, there was always the unexpected, but that couldn't be helped. Afterward, they made arrangements with the manager to have a cab waiting for them in the hotel's underground garage so that they could slip away from the hotel without being seen. Assuming that Anya's loft was being watched, they staged an argument just outside the building, with Anya yelling at Henshaw through the cab's window.
I don't care what you think, dammit, I'm handling this myself!
Everything was done in an attempt to convince the watchers they knew were out there that Anya was following the dragon's instructions to the letter.